Okay, so in Chavis Alvavis, Mezus Hashem, Shal Bitachen, Perek Dalid, the chart that starts the Hasoko, right in the middle of the Perek. I should probably spell the first 10. What's it? 410? 410 in the English. 410 in the English. Thank you. Okay. So let's pick up from where we left off last week. What we're talking about now is a person who carries the responsibility. Oh, should we close the door, please?
I think that's that.
Thank you. Okay. We're talking about the second category, right? Let's just back to the broader perspective. Bitachon applied to the various areas of life. And he's in the second category. Bitachon when it comes to the people you're responsible for, providing for the people you're responsible for. So we ended last week with the Chavos HaVavos telling us that bitachon is a test of one level when it comes to caring about your own welfare. And it's a whole different level when it kind of brings out new challenges when it comes to a person who is responsible for other people's sustenance, whether it's his family, whether he's an employer of a large company, has employees under him, or whether it's a ruler, carries a responsibility for a whole nation. So he says, this presents unique tests, and this is what we're up to. He says, the fool will make three mistakes in this area. Number one, we discussed last week, is that the feeling of desperation is kind of like, we'll take the usual test of bitachon, take it to the next level. The feeling of desperation, I have to make this happen. I have to have enough money by the end of the month. And therefore, I may start taking less legitimate means, being a little more dishonest, cutting corners when it comes to halacha, etc. In general, right? This is really the general test of bitachon taken a step further. Hashem tells you there are certain needs that I want you to care for yourself. Comes to parnasa, you have to get, let's say, those $5,000 in by the end of the month. So I'm giving you a certain participation in that process. Why am I giving it to you? Because I want to see if you've managed to navigate the test of trying to get those $5,000, but according to my guidelines. Meaning if I tell you Friday, well, on Shabbos, stop, will you be capable of doing that? If I tell you I want you to work for that parnasa, but at the same time I want you to cut out three times a day for davening, will you be able to do that? It's not that the two are clashing. It's that the whole purpose of the need for parnasa is for Hashem to test you, right? So Hashem says, I want to see if you can manage that. Can you manage to feel like I need all day, but yet I'm going to cut out the time for shachris from the Mincha? Can you navigate the test of cutting out time for learning? I'm talking in terms of a man, apply it to the way it applies to women, right? But the concept. Can you withstand the test of keeping absolutely honest, keeping to ironclad integrity, even when it looks like by pushing it a little here and pushing the lines a little there, you'll be able to get more? And while if you keep it perfectly honest, you're going to come up short. You're only going to have 4,200 at the end of the month. Hashem says, this is all what I want to see. If you're capable of doing all that. It's not that these things are getting in the way of Chavos Hishtadlus. So the whole purpose of Chavos Hishtadlus. Hashem says, I want to test you with these things. So the first point that he's telling us is that when a person is not responsible for other people, that test gets stepped up another level. And the person will be more tempted to use illegitimate means to get that money. So this is really just an expansion of a concept we already know. So let's move on to the next possible, the pitfall here. Hasheni. Number two is, Kilchoyshev, a person thinks, Shekol ma sheigia elov min hamamon, huteref mezayin. Whatever money I make, is really my money. So when Hashem is giving a person money, there can be three purposes in the money that you're getting. We said this last week, that a person might feel like, I am making $12,000 a month, and I have a whole family that I have to support. If I were living on my own, I'd have all that money for myself. Right? So it's kind of like, I have $12,000, and I have to use a certain sum of it for my dependents. This isn't, it's not actually true. Hashem, when he is allocating the funds, when Hashem is allocating the funds, he's giving you different things with different allocations. You on your own, I would only give you $4,000. I give you three, right? Oh, but you're doing another job also. You're taking care of them. So first of all, I'm going to give an added allocation for them. It's not your money. Don't think so. It's not your money. It's theirs. B, I might actually be giving you a bonus because of the fact that you're taking care of them. Now, maybe for your own personal needs, I give you $3,000. But you know what? You're also caring for them. I'm going to give you $4,000 and another $8,000 for them. But this person thinks these 12 are mine. I'd like to be able to maybe pinch pennies a little bit. Maybe I'd like to pinch pennies a little bit and save a bit more. And save a bit more. So he says, there are three layers in the money that you're making. One is your personal sustenance. This is for you personally. This is an interesting point that the Kodesh Halevi says. This is something that you are more guaranteed. Meaning, there's a certain level of sustenance that Hashem, I'm not sure exactly how to say this, nothing is guaranteed. But like, let's say, you know, person, we can assume basically that we're going to have eyesight for the foreseeable future, right? We can assume that basically my systems are going to keep working. Of course, there can be things that happen that throw things off. But in a general way, I can assume that that's part and parcel of my existence, right? I have two working eyes, Baruch Hashem, I have working teeth. I can expect that I'm going to continue to have them in a general way, right? So he's saying basic parnassah is a part of that package. Of course, I'm qualifying that and saying you never know who will lose what when. But in terms of the normal way it works, so he's telling us a chiddush here, basic personal parnassah is actually a part of that package. It's close to guaranteed. Now, question.
You mentioned penny pinching. Is penny pinching shabbos or is it a lack of bitachon?
Oh, so that's a good question. Is penny pinching a shtadlis or is it a lack of bitachon? That's a good question. It's very subjective. It's very subjective because it very much depends on the circumstances. Let's describe two extreme cases, okay? Two opposite extremes, right? You have the person, but like we said before, he's making plenty. He's making plenty. He makes twice as much as his family needs. And Lamaisa, but he figures, hey, you never know, right? Who knows what I'll need when? And therefore, his child really needs dental treatment, but he's like, who knows if I'll suddenly need that money? Can we get away with a very basic treatment done by some anonymous public health doctor instead of having to actually go to somebody expensive? I can afford it right now, right? I have plenty, but who knows? That's an extreme lack of bitachon, right? And then you have, I'll just finish up the point. And then you, so here, penny pinching, well, amaisa, you have plenty. And there are needs that need to be laid out. Right now, Hashem is placing these needs in front of you. And the expectation is these are things you should be spending your money on. This is what the money is for. There, the penny pinching is certainly a lack of bitachon. But then you have other situations where a person has much less than he needs, and he sees that there are more needs ahead of him. And perhaps he has become accustomed to certain luxuries that are really beyond his means. And he says, I have to take a step back here and I have to be a little more thrifty in order to bring my lifestyle into my current budget. There, it's a very legitimate hishtablis. That's very broad strokes. Of course, it's going to break down to many more cases. But in a general way, that's the way we would approach it. Rebbetzin Shvei. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Shvei.
What about everybody gets 10% of whatever they earn, the normal amount of the wealthy man, everybody gets 10%. What if you get a raise and you get or you inherit money that they also already gave 10% of their life, and you have this extra money, but it's not money that you want to use for affluent things. It's money that you will spend in your life, in your lifestyle, living to live within your means. Do they have to give more sucker from that kind of money that they need it not for luxury?
If a person received, the question is, tell me if I have the question right. If a person received money as a gift or as an inheritance mm-hmm. that they need for basic needs, and that money came miser, it was misered by the person who gave it to him. Does he have to remove miser again? So I prefer not to answer that question now because this is lemaisa a concrete halacha shayla. I want to keep halacha separate from what we're discussing now. But bli nether, after the shir, after we turn off the recording, I'll bli nether come back to it. Okay. Another question.
Talking back before, you spoke about that basically Hashem gives us what we need. That we can, it's not exactly a guarantee, but somehow in the words of Lovis, there is a guarantee. But how do we understand the many, many families that do not seem to have enough? We give tremendous amounts of tzedakah to everybody has their gemach, many, many families are in great financial need. So if we're basically guaranteed, then.
Oh, so let's see. Let's go a little bit further. Let's finish this paragraph. It's a very good, legitimate question. The Chavos HaLevavos is telling us that there is, again, we're not exactly sure how to take this, but a mivtach, he calls it, a certain guarantee, a certain level of guarantee that your very basic personal sustenance is included in your package. But how does this work with the many cases that doesn't seem to be the case? Let's finish the paragraph and see if we have at least a partial answer to that question. Okay, so he's saying, again, the money that we're allocated has three layers. There's your very direct personal sustenance, and that has that certain level of, it's part of your basic package. Hashem, okay? Number two is, Teref mezoin zulasoi, me'isha ubanim va'avodim u'mishosim va'adayim v'lehem. The next level is your dependents. Dependents as ENTS, right? Those who are dependent on you. Your wife, your children, your employees. You don't have a guarantee that you're going to be given that.
But do they have a guarantee that they're going to get number one?
Do they have a guarantee that they're going to get it? So presumably this goes back to each of these people also is that original person who has his own personal, right? Now, again, how do we work this with the fact that but let's just first of all say that in many cases of these needy families, if the head of the household was just living completely on his own, he'd probably be able to swing it by himself. And this is the case where he was given that, but he wasn't given more than that. And indeed, their package was meant to come through the other means of help, the other organizations, etc. But that's a partial answer. Let's go a bit further and see if we'll come back to it. So he says, once you're already caring for other people, parnosa becomes much less possible. And this is not that part and parcel of your own welfare. Not always is it provided. This already is subject to different conditions. It's more complicated. Sometimes you'll have it, sometimes you won't. According to Hashem's complex cheshbonos. So this is why, yeah, we are likely to see families struggling. Again, I can't explain, this is a chiddush of the chiddush halvavos. People who are just basically fending for themselves are more likely to get by. It also just works that way numerically, right? People who are more fending for themselves are more likely to get by. Once we're talking about caring for others, once we're talking about you need to care for a family, there it's more likely to be complicated. Now he's putting it into chiddush halvavos terms, but the truth is that this is really a piece of practical reality that we just see. It's not as simple to care for a family as it is to care for yourself. So here, yes, people will be more challenged in this realm. But whatever the case is, when the person is getting his allocation, so there's the part that's earmarked. This is for you personally. There's the part that's earmarked. This is for your family. Again, I'm talking in terms of family, just to be most relevant to us, but like your employees, etc., right? This is for your family. Bashlishi, and then there's a third part of the package. Teref, kinyan, the extras, the money set aside. This is what I was talking about. Savings, etc. You got your money, you personally are covered, your family is covered, and then there's the extra. And he says, interestingly, just one moment, that this is the money, this is the part of the money that has the biggest question mark on it. You really never know what Hashem actually has in mind with it. Question.
Yeah, so you get money, you know that 10% goes to Mazda, but beyond that, how do you know? Like, I think a lot of women would give everything to their children and not take care of themselves, for example. They would overdo number two and not take care of number one. Like, how do you know what portions are for you and what portions for
you don't.
Others?
Oh, so here's the question. How are you supposed to figure out exactly where those earmarks are? Right? They don't come with an obvious tag. We'd like to see those tags. Okay, so let's continue a bit. So then we have this third layer. The third layer is the extra. Hashem's giving it to you. So the natural feeling is, oh, wow, I have all this extra money. The Chavos HaLevavos is telling us, no, this is already mamish with a big question mark. It could be for a whole bunch of different things. You never know what Hashem has in mind. It could be that Hashem has it in mind. I told us earlier. It could be that he has it in mind that Hashem says, this is actually, right now is now we're in the middle of Shvat, right? This is actually Sivan's Parnassah. You don't know it yet, but in Sivan, I'm actually going to close the faucet on your business. But I don't want you to suffer. Then I'm giving you the money now. Now, when the person hits Sivan, he suddenly thinks, what's Hashem doing to me? This money was set aside for vacation, right? He doesn't realize, no. Hashem gave you, for whatever reason he decided, he gave you Sivan's money in Shvat, right? He's going to give you Adar's money in Adar, Nisan's money in Nisan. But Hashem decided to give you Sivan's money in Shvat. The person doesn't really think he's all bitter. He has to dip into his savings. They weren't meant to savings in the first place. It's also possible, based on what Olam Hill was discussing, this is the money for later in life. But other things are also possible. And as we mentioned at the end, last week, this is money that is not actually meant to bring you any benefit. And it's actually earmarked with somebody else's name on it. Hashem is passing it through you. You just opened a bank account. This is a handy place, Hashem says, for me to store this money. And it's really meant to get somewhere else. Just I feel like it's mine, right? Hashem says, I want this person's son to be well taken care of. His children. This isn't for the person b'chlal. Just that his children are less capable businessmen. They're not going to manage to make the money. I want them to be covered anyways. They're going to inherit it. Some people get their keep through their ishtadlis. Some people get it as an inheritance. So Hashem says, I'm giving this to the father. The father thinks I have who knows how much money. The truth is, no, this is actually intended for your children 20 years down the line. Please hold on to it in your bank account. And he knows this fellow. He knows he'll do a fine job keeping it in the bank account and not touching it. Where Hashem says, in another half a year, I have aggravation nigzar on this person. And therefore, I'm giving him money to lose. That's what that money is there for. Because actually, the person might feel like he went through a terrible misfortune, but it's actually a certain chesed there, right? Hashem is saying this person needs to go through aggravation. I want it to be gentle. I'm going to give him a windfall of $20,000 a bit earlier in the year. What's it for? It's earmarked this person's aggravation that was nigzar in Rosh Hashanah. That's what it's there for. It's there, giving it to you now for you to lose it in 3 months. So you really don't know. You really don't know. When you get that extra money, it's one big question mark. Now, the fool will think that whatever Hashem allocates to him, so all that is mine personally. He thinks of it in terms of that first category. This is mine. Ooh, I have to share some with my family. Ekes it out, right? Or with my employees, that's even more difficult. I knew of somebody like that. It's such a hard time signing the checks at the end of the month. Such a hard time, like giving of his money. Okay, he had to. You know, they did work for him for a month. There is an agreement in place, but this is his money and he has to part with it, right? So he thinks it's all his. So he puts much more effort into it, into that third category that he doesn't even know. People sometimes put so much of their effort and their pursuit and their obsession into that third category that is so precarious, you don't have any idea if, listen to what he says, it might be earmarked your wife's next husband. Right? But Hashem says, I know you'll do a good job saving it for him. So here, put in the effort. Right? This is my way of getting it to him. So, the Chavis of Avis isn't, or even worse, Ula Hargai, Ula Gadol Shebesayna. Hashem, this might be for the person's killer. Even worse, Rachman al-Itzlan. So, Chavis of Avis isn't taking it a step further, but what is the idea here? So the idea here is that you want to make sure that particularly that third category, that I am ensuring that it will bring me benefit. How do I do that? So we have a few different formula from the Gemara. First of all, something that was already brought up here earlier. This is where Maaser Kesafim comes in. If a person, that windfall of $20,000 that the person got, because Hashem says, I want him to lose it. The first thing this person did was, he took off Maaser of $2,000. Maybe even took off a Chaimish of $4,000. Ooh, now nobody can take that away from him anymore. Right? That money he's not going to lose. That money he put away in his eternal bank account, it's his for keeps. He might lose the other $16,000, $18,000, but he secured those two. Those are his forever. And therefore the Gemara says, when a person comes through some windfall, whatever it is, do a mitzvah with the money. I'm not saying automatically every time you make $50,000, spend the whole $50,000 on a mitzvah. You might want to put it away, but take a portion of that money and do a mitzvah with it. You gave your ma'aser, now figure out what's something good that I can do with this chunk of money. Gemara says, buy a sefer Torah with it, right? Different things that you can do, a mitzvah with the money to ensure that I've already profited from this money. And there are other things you can do. You know what? You got the money. You thank Hashem for it. Even if you lose it tomorrow, you have profited more than the money is worth. Right? If you thank Hashem from the bottom of your heart for these unexpected $50,000, then you lose it 3 days later, that thanks is already something that no one can take away from you.
Is that your disappointment or your resentment or anything like that take that away?
So this is why we're learning the Chovas Halavos, meaning if we'll be capable of developing this attitude, like we always say, it's easier said than done, and that's why we're learning it, right? We're learning it when it's easy to say, right? And if a person can then say, I was never tested with this, you know, I'm being honest, I'm not preaching what I practice, I'm preaching what we'll all aspire for together, right? But then if a person can say, okay, I understand that, I learned this Chovas Halavos well, and I'm embracing it. And then you know what? The loss itself is a profit. The loss itself brought you benefit. I'll bring in the question.
If a person benefits from partnership, something like that, and the partnership's done well, and they thank the Kodesh Baruch Hu for it, they have given and saved the Torah, and they know that their children need help. Okay, for them to live outside, like you can see them steadily getting into more situations. You're obligated to help the child too, or you can give the sefer Torah first, or you've already given the sefer Torah.
The person has extra money, his children are struggling.
Grown children.
Let me tell you a story about the Kapishnitzer Rebbe. There was a story with the Kapishnitzer Rebbe. I don't know if anybody has even heard of it. I also have to practice pronouncing it. But this is a Rebbe who is very inspiring to read about because of how down to earth the stories about him are. He one day showed up at the office of a very wealthy man, knocked on the door. Man was very surprised to see the Rebbe there. And the Rebbe was always involved with all kinds of cases and chesed. He said, well, what can I do for the Rebbe? And the Rebbe said, I'm involved with a certain case. I need your help. I come in, sit down. He said, Rebbe could have called me. He was like a little overwhelmed that the Rebbe came to him. No, I wanted to come to you. Okay, tell me about it. What can I do? So he tells him a story about a certain family that's struggling mightily. He said, I took it upon myself to care for this family. And the rich man is all inspired and he's very honored by the Rebbe's presence. He pulls out his checkbook and says, okay, Rebbe, who should I make it out for? Tell me the sum. The Rebbe told him the sum. Who should I make it out for? And then the Rebbe stared at him for a second and told him his brother's name. What's the point? The point is that having a struggling family member is not something different. We're telling you, use it for mitzvahs. But should I use it for a struggling family member instead of using for the mitzvah? When you have a child at home who didn't eat breakfast this morning, giving him breakfast is using your bread for a mitzvah, right? Supporting your family and certainly supporting needy family members is that mitzvah that we're talking about. It's not a conflict to it. Just what? I'll make this point and I'll say that we can also go in the other direction of once I appreciate that caring for my family is a mitzvah, then everything just moves in that direction, right? And now I want to help my child even more. I want to send them on a vacation to the Bahamas for Pesach because they could really use it while my next door neighbor, who's not a family member, doesn't have matzah. So on the one hand, let's remember that, and this is actually a common balance that has to be struck. Let's really be keenly aware of the fact that helping our family is not less chesed than other chesed. If anything, we could say that it's more. Exactly. Right? That's where it starts. You can have a person whose name is plastered all over the place, but he acts like a chaya towards his own family because they're not going to plaster his name up. Right? On the other hand, in order for it to really be chesed, it can't become exclusively focused on the family because then it just turns into self-serving chesed, right? There's a balance to be struck here. Now, in order to round out this point, I want to come to this last point that he was saying about the extra money. So there's the famous story in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which is a very important piece here in this picture. The Rechnam and Zakkai had two nephews. They were business partners, these two nephews. They were well-to-do business partners. The Rechnam and Zakkai, their uncle, He came and he approached them for help with a needy family, some tzedakah that he was involved in. They gave him money. He was back 3 days later. They gave him again. Came back a week later. And they gave him again, but it was starting to get like, you know, Uncle Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is just not letting up on us. And he kept talking them. He kept talking them. Throughout the year, he was coming and coming again and coming again. And they started like a little harder to give, and a little harder to give. But he was basically talking them and nudging them straight throughout the year. Okay? Finally, it was like Mamish toward the end of the year, these two brothers were arrested. They were arrested by the authorities. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came to visit them in jail, and when you were arrested by the Roman authorities, you had no idea what was waiting for you. Right? They were terrified. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came to visit them in jail, and he told them, "Don't worry, they're going to impose a fine on you. I forgot if it was 13 or 17 zoos. 13 or 17 zoos. It's gonna begin and end with that." And that's what happened. They were booked before the judge, some sort of charge. They got that fine, and they came back to him. They said, "How did you know?" So he told him, listen to this. He told them, "On Rosh Hashanah last year, I had a dream that both of you were meant to lose 400 zoos. And that was why I've been hucking you this whole year. I wanted to schlep 400 zoos out of you. That loss would come, would all be put into tzedakah. And by the end of the year, we were up to 483, 487, I forgot the sum, right? 383. So I knew that something's going to happen. You're going to lose these last 17 zoos. And that's why when you're arrested, I said, okay, fine. But I didn't manage to schlep out of you, they're going to fine you for now. So they said to him, "Why don't you tell us that back at the beginning? We would have handed you a check for 400. And, you know, he said, "No, that wouldn't have been a mitzvah. Wouldn't have been L'shem Shamayim. This way you've got those 383 L'shem Shamayim. But this is the point that we're making. This is the point that we're making. The person thinks it's his. No. Once it's in the realm of the extra, so it isn't yours. What's it for? You have no idea. But right now you have a right to use it. So use it wisely." "Oh, so now you come and ask me 1 minute. So if so, then setting aside money for the future is completely not wise." No. When a person is taking, let's come back to what we've been discussing the whole time. That things that you are doing in the framework of reasonable responsibility, ishtadlus, is actually included in the mitzvah of ishtadlus. So let's remember that. So when a person is doing it in that balanced, responsible way, not with an attitude of who knows when I'll need what, and what happens if I chas v'shalom do live for 1,000 years, right? So then we can't call it a mitzvah. But when it's being done in that reasonable, responsible way of setting myself up, not getting neurotic about it, not getting obsessed with it, then on the contrary, you're using that money responsibly. And if you do end up losing the money, you'll be credited for handling it responsibly. That's what the Chazal of others told us earlier. That's a fundamental point to remember. When you do ishtadlis and it doesn't succeed, you'll be credited for cooperating with Hashem's plan, and that's a mitzvah in and of itself. So that's something very important to remember. And here we understand, right? The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us about Munbaz HaMelech. Munbaz HaMelech was one of the Chashmonai kings. It says that his ancestors had amassed great treasures, had great treasure houses. So Munbaz HaMelech basically came along and opened all the treasure houses, gave it all to tzedakah. Gave all the money. Each king before him had added to the family treasure and added to the family treasure. He came and gave away the whole thing. So he was asked, "Why'd you do that?" His response was, "They left it vulnerable. I put it away in a secure place. No one will ever be able to take it away from the family now. We have it forever." That was his answer. And this is what we're talking about. Now, we come back to, the person says, "All right, fine. Now I'm inspired. I'm going to give it all away." So first, what's that?
That reasonable discussion.
Oh, so this is when we come back to Chazal told us, wait, up to a fifth. Right? This is what Chazal told us. Up to a fifth, do that. Beyond that, so when you're setting it aside and not spending it, don't think, because I need to hold on to it, but rather think, I'm following Chazal's directive in what they dictated as, coming back to those key words, reasonable, responsible, ishtablis. Chazal want me to hold on to 80% of it. Up till 20, gesunte hey. How did that work with Munbaz? Not sure. I don't know if we have to get into that. The truth is that the Chofetz Chaim says that when we talk about the limit of Chaimish, you know, if you have a person who has $100 billion and he wants to give away $70 billion, he'll only be left with $30 billion. No one is going to come and tell him, hey, that's more than a Chaimish. The Chofetz Chaim says that. He says in his Sefer Avos Chesed, he says that it means if Lamaisa, the sum total is something that's still within the realm of something that a person might need. But when it's way beyond that, you're allowed to give away more than a Chaimish. I think that a person with $100 billion isn't required to, but would be allowed to give away $99 billion and leave a billion for himself. Now, coming back to your question of how do you know? How do you know what's meant for you? What you're meant to be spending on your family, etc. So here we would come back and say, it comes back to those guidelines of spend, provide for their needs comfortably and responsibly. This is the Ratzon Hashem. That's what you can assume. Now, you don't have to figure out exactly what, how many cents and dollars did Hashem mean, but they were put into my care. I'm going to care for them amply. I'm going to care for them comfortably. Doesn't mean that you have to now go and start, you know, overdoing it. But it goes back to that, those words, reasonable, responsible. Okay. Number three. So what did we see? That's pitfall number two. Pitfall number two of the person who has others put into his care is that he might not realize that this is for me, this is for my family, this is actually just broad question mark. I don't know what it's meant to be for. He thinks of it all as, this is my personal, these are my personal funds, whatever I'm going to give away or whatever is, I'm getting rid of it myself. I'm getting rid of it on my own, at my own expense. Okay. Pitfall number three is the attitude. We're not going to read it inside now. We'll just throw it out meanwhile. But pitfall number three is the attitude. When Hashem gives you, uses you as a conduit for other people, so he expects you to relate to yourself that way, to see yourself as, Hashem gave me this chus of being able to provide for these people, to be his messenger to provide for these people, and not to have an attitude of, wow, these people really owe me. Not to insist on the recognition, etc., but to have the attitude of, Hashem gave me this chus of being his medium of giving what he intended for them. Okay. We'll end with this. This week, question.
What you just said about applying to do an act of chesed on
Essentially, yes. Now, that's not a conflict to feeling good about it. It's a conflict to, it's a contradiction to expecting the recognition. Meaning, there is a level of, I'd like to hear a thank you. That's not what we're talking about. That's all we're talking about. That's legitimate. But sometimes it goes a lot further than that. And you know what? Bli Neder, if I remember, I'm going to try to remember to begin next week by elaborating on that Bli Neder. Now I'll just come.